everyone. What is up? My name is Tony McGeehee, and you're listening to Emerging Entrepreneurs, the podcast made by an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get started. Welcome back to episode 7. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome home. You guys are awesome, and thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great guest for you today. I know you're going to love it. James Carberry is the founder of Sweetfish Media, which is a podcast agency that helps B2B companies start their own podcast. James also hosts his own podcast, B2B Growth, where he interviews different leaders in the space. In this episode, we dive into how James created his business and the things he wished he knew before starting. We also talk about how important it is to have supportive friends and family by your side no matter what you do. And I also had the pleasure of asking James a bit about his interviews with entrepreneurs such as Simon Sinek and Gary Vaynerchuk. So don't go anywhere, guys. Please leave a review and subscribe on iTunes and share the podcast with your friends. Also, please go follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Emerging Entrepreneurs Podcast. Now, without further ado, let's jump right in. Welcome back to episode 7 of Emerging Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm here today with James Carberry, founder of Sweetfish Media and co-host of B2B Growth Podcast, as well as a contributor for Entrepreneur.com. I had the pleasure of meeting James last Friday at a networking event here in Orlando, and man, what a pleasure it was. Really had a great time meeting James for the first time. This guy's really awesome. You guys are really going to learn a lot in this episode. He's interviewed, you know, hundreds, thousands of people, even, you know, big names from Simon Sinek to Gary Vaynerchuk. So definitely want to stick around for this whole episode, guys. You're not going to want to miss it. So James, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
I'm really excited to dive in, man. It's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, perfect. So just to start, just go ahead and tell the audience just a little bit about yourself, a little bit about Sweetfish Media and what your company does.
Yeah, man. So we produce podcasts for B2B companies. So businesses that sell to other businesses. So that looks like a lot of companies that people have never heard of before, just because they're not direct to consumer brands. But that's the niche that we've carved out for ourselves. So we do a lot of podcast production, and then we repurpose that audio content into other forms of content as well, specifically on LinkedIn. So that's what we do as a business. And then, just personally, I grew up in a really small town outside of Oklahoma City. And through a weird series of circumstances, ended up getting a job offer to do helicopter logistics for NASCAR here in Orlando. So that is what moved me from Oklahoma to Orlando about 8.5 years ago, and have been out here ever since.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Florida's always nice, the sunshine state, you know, except for the summer. It's raining a lot, but other than that, can't complain. Not at all. So, you know, you talked about moving here with helicopter logistics. How did you get into the B2B space and, you know, creating Sweetfish?
Yeah. So doing helicopter logistics, it was a pretty small business, maybe 15 employees. And, it was my first exposure to working for an entrepreneur. So in college, I had no clue what an entrepreneur was. I had nobody in my life that had started a business. And so I didn't even really consider that a possibility for me. So in college, right out of college, I started working for big companies. So I worked for, you know, Farmers Insurance and, energy company called Chesapeake. And so did a lot of corporate gigs, and realized that, I was not satisfied or fulfilled in those kind of big corporate environments. And so when the opportunity came for me to work, for a company called ETA Logistics, which is the company that moved me to Orlando, it was really my first exposure working for an entrepreneur, and did that for 3 years, and really realized, like, man, I could do my own thing. And so, a couple different things happened. I ended up getting into marketing, and specifically content marketing, working for a couple smaller businesses after my time doing helicopter logistics. And I got engaged, and shortly after I got engaged, the tech company that I was working for had to let me go. Their funding had dried up, and And so, I was trying to figure out what my next step was. And I thought, you know what? Like I need to go ahead and pull the trigger on starting my own thing, because if I don't do it now, I'm going to get married. We're going to have kids, and I'm going to look back, at this season of life and wish that I had started something, when I had the opportunity and without the responsibility that comes with, you know, kids and that kind of thing. And so, so that's really, I just looking through my skill set and what I was good at, knew that I understood content marketing better than most. And so I thought, man, I'll help small companies with content marketing. And then over the, you know, getting that business off the ground, getting it started for the first year, realized that there was a massive opportunity in the podcast niche, and also realized that if you don't have a unique selling proposition as a business, if people don't identify you as being unique in the marketplace, it is extremely hard for you to get traction. And we were just, you know, a regular blog writing shop, which are a dime a dozen. There are tons of companies that focus on writing blog posts. There weren't a ton of companies that were focused on producing podcasts. And so by us niching down and focusing on the podcast market, knowing that B2B companies could see enormous benefit from this, we not only niched down with the service that we offer being in podcasts, but we also niched down our market and who we wanted to go after and sell to. So, so in doing those two things, we've just been able to see enormous traction. So that's a little bit of the story of how I went from putting Jeff Gordon on a helicopter to producing podcasts.
Yeah. So how many years ago was Sweetfish founded, and how different was podcasting then?
Yeah. So, we started the company 3.5 years ago. I had done a podcast even before I started Sweetfish. So, having done that podcast, I realized that I could pretty much get anyone on our show that I wanted to be on that show. That show was called Inspiring Awesome, and we were just interviewing really inspiring people. But it allowed me a seat at the table with just about anybody, because I wasn't trying to sell them anything. I wanted to feature them on our show. And because of that, people were very willing to do that. And so I think that's how a lot of people see, you know, being asked to be on a podcast as a very, it's a play to their ego. Who doesn't want to be featured as an expert on something?
Yeah,
and so,
exactly.
using it, leveraging the power of it in that way, I don't think is something that a lot of people in the podcasting space fully understand. They think, oh, I'm going to go and get, you know, authors and speakers to be on my show, because I want really good content. But instead, if you shift your focus to saying, who are your ideal clients? They may not be speakers and authors. They more often than not aren't. But if your ideal clients probably have an expertise in their specific area. Mm-hmm. And if you can build a podcast around the expertise of your ideal clients, you can become a media company that creates content hyper specific to them. And you don't even have to come up with the content yourself. Your ideal clients do. You just interview them on your show to extract that content from them. And then you end up being this magnet for people in that industry that want to learn and get better professionally. And they're coming to you for it, as opposed to you having to knock down their door trying to sell your thing. You've got people now coming to you. So I don't know that podcasting, at least from my perspective, I don't know that, you know, there's probably a lot of technical elements of podcasting that have evolved over the years. I have not, you know, noticed a big change. Obviously, more people are adopting it year over year. More people are listening to podcasts. But I don't know that there's been necessarily, you know, massive changes in the industry. But what we're really trying to bring to market is a different way of looking at podcasting, in that there's more benefit to it than just getting a bunch of people to listen to your show, where most podcasters are so consumed with how many listeners they have. I actually don't care how many listeners I have, because my buyers don't tend to be my listeners. Sometimes they do, but very rarely does a listener turn into a customer. Much more likely, one of our guests is going to turn into a customer. So when you flip the script like that, it just changes your entire mindset. So that's what we're hoping. That's the change that we're hoping to bring to the market, is how people perceive podcasting as being more guest-centric than listener-centric.
Gotcha. That's a pretty cool perspective on that.
I know not a lot of people have that for sure. You talked about earlier when you were talking about being in college and getting right out of it that, you know, you had never really even known what entrepreneurship was. So kind of the same question as the podcasting question, how different now and how more like common and advanced have you seen, you know, the term entrepreneur and seen, you know, entrepreneurship grow since that time?
I think guys like Gary V have done a phenomenal job. I think the rise of social media has also been massive. I mean, going back to the time I was in college, I mean, Facebook didn't even come out until I was a freshman in college. And so, I don't think entrepreneurship was put on the pedestal that it is today. I think there's a lot more exposure to the concept of entrepreneurship. Yeah. Now I think the problem we're having is there's so much exposure that I think everyone thinks they're supposed to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. And I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I don't think it takes an enormous amount of willingness to eat a lot of crap to be an entrepreneur, to own the responsibility of everything being your fault. Like in our business, we've got, you know, 35 or 40 customers. We've got a team of 29 people, and everything is my fault. If it's a breakdown with a client and we didn't execute well, it's not my director of operations' fault. It's my fault for not leading our director of operations to have a better process in place. It's not our account manager's fault. It's my fault. And there are a lot of people that I don't think want the weight of that on their shoulders. And they just see the glamour of it. They see people posting fake pictures on Instagram of getting into jets that they, you know, that they're not actually paying to use. They're just getting it for the photo. Exactly. So I think there's a lot of fake entrepreneurship out there. 100%. And that's why I love Gary Vee's content so much, is he's kind of exposing what it's really like to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. He talks about often how hard it is. Like, I mean, man, up until the past 6 months, I've paid myself. I mean, I don't even want to say what I've been paying. It's been such a laughable amount of money. Yeah. And it's nothing. I mean, it's close to nothing because I was investing in the business and building the business. It's now starting to reap tremendous rewards, but I think so many people want to get into entrepreneurship just to get rich. Exactly. And that is not at all the case. So it's a good and a bad thing. I think it's great that entrepreneurship is being talked about more, and there are channels now like social media and different outlets for us to learn more about it, and get exposure to it. Cause certainly had I known about it in college, I probably would have gotten into it earlier. But the downside of that is I think there's this false reality that everyone was made to be an entrepreneur. And I don't think that that's the case at all.
Yeah. 100%. You know, I still battle with that. I think, you know, especially on this journey, I just started a couple months ago, and I've always thought that, you know, I was maybe supposed to be an entrepreneur, that I think I had it in me. But, you know, a lot of that is from social media, you know, all the influence that's on there. Like you said, you just see these private jets and these nice lake houses and oceanside houses and all this stuff. And, you know, even the people who are the least influenced, it's tough not to be influenced by social media and all of that.
Yeah.
And totally. So, you know, with that, obviously being a true entrepreneur takes an incredible amount of perseverance. So, you know, when you were building Sweetfish and you were talking about how you were basically paying yourself nothing, you know, how many people were telling you, you know, like, you should just quit this, like, you need to give up, like, even the people closest to you, were you getting that from some of them?
I was very, very fortunate. I was raised in an environment where I was always extremely supported. My mom, my grandma, my sister have always been extremely supportive of me. And I think because of that, it's allowed me to surround myself in my adult life with people that are incredibly supportive. My wife has never once asked me to shut down the business. My friends have always kind of urged me to keep pushing forward, telling me that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I surround myself with a lot of entrepreneurial friends who have also kind of, they're on this journey with me. Yeah. So I've been very fortunate to not have anybody in my life. I don't think that that's the normal thing. I think yeah, normal people, have people in their life telling them like, man, why don't you stop this? But even though I have a cast of extremely supportive people around me, I remember, you know, at the beginning of this year, even having thoughts of, man, should I just shut this down? We've been doing this for 3 years. It's not getting the traction that we thought it would get. And we've just had a breakout year this year. You know, next year we'll be a 7-figure business and with incredible margin, meaning that I'm going to be making a lot of money in, you know, I'm already making more money than I've ever made before in my life. Not that it's about the money. It's just that it took 3 years and even at the 3-year mark, I myself having extremely supportive friends with nobody telling me to stop, just in my own head was telling myself, James, like maybe you should just hang up the boots here and go get a job. And so it's extremely difficult because I think if you've got a mom or a dad or a sibling that's telling you you're stupid and you just need to pack it up, had I had that in conjunction with what I was already telling myself, I probably wouldn't still be here today. I probably would have just packed it in. I totally agree, man, that perseverance and sticking with something. And there's also, there's a certain amount of self-awareness that goes along with that because I think you can be blind to an idea that clearly isn't desired in the marketplace. And if you are romantic about the product or the service that you're trying to sell, that, you know, for the business that you're trying to build, if people don't want it, they don't want it. And I think one thing that I learned in these last 3.5 years, we've iterated and we've changed our product and service so many more times than I can count. I mean, we started off as a blog writing shop and then we pivoted into becoming a podcast production agency. And now we've started doing video content. We've added that to the mix. We started repurposing content on LinkedIn. So we're constantly refining our service, making it better. We've completely changed the market that we go after. We used to try to sell to sales leaders. Now we sell to B2B marketing leaders. So vastly different audience that we've sold to. So we're constantly changing and tweaking and iterating things because, if you don't, you're going to die. And I think the idea that you have in your head that is going to, you know, allow you to build a big business is not actually going to be the exact idea that allows you to do that. And so you've got to be open-handed and willing to say, and we have to serve the market. If we don't serve the market, we're not going to be able to build a business. And so being adaptable to what the market actually wants and is willing to pay for is so incredibly important. And so, I think that has been a massive lesson learned for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, congratulations on, you know, the breakout year. I'm sure it feels very relieving after 3 years, you know,
it does.
Just always wondering if, you know, is, you know, do I got to hang this up or do I keep going with it? I'm sure it's a very relieving feeling.
Totally. It absolutely is.
Yeah. So what I want to ask you is how much harder was it than you expected originally? You know, how much more time did it take than you originally thought? And how much more effort did it take?
My business partner jokes around all the time that, you know, I thought we would be at the level of revenue that we're at today, 3.5 years in. I thought we would be at this level of revenue in the first year of us pivoting into the podcast model. So year two of the business is, you know, where I thought we would be. And everything just takes significantly more time than you think. Your customers aren't going to pay you as fast as you think they're going to. The market is not going to adopt your philosophy or your perspective as quickly as you think they're going to. It has taken me, you know, writing content on LinkedIn, you know, at one point I was doing it every single day. And I've tapered off on that a little bit, but now I've got other people on our team that are writing content on LinkedIn on a regular basis. And so the process of continuing to educate the market, continuing to show up, every single day, day in, day out, is something that I don't realize. I don't think I realized how consistent I needed to be. And it's one of those things that never stops. Like if we stop being consistent, we're not going to continue to experience the success that we're experiencing now. But the ramp time for getting to where we are today was a whole lot longer. But when you think of it in the context of your entire career, you know, I don't know what the age range is of the folks listening to this podcast, but if you're in your early 20s, I mean, you've just got a lot of life left. I mean, Gary Vee talks about it all the time, but I mean, you've got another 50 or 60 years, in the tank, probably minimum, depending on, you know, where medical advances are going and things like that. And so when I look back and say, yeah, it's taken me 3.5 years to build this thing that is now finally starting to produce an incredible income for my family. 3.5 years is nothing in light of the fact that, you know, this is a business that I get to have for the rest of my life, you know, and I'm in my early 30s. So I've got another 40 or 50 years in my tank. Yeah. And to have invested 3.5 years of paying myself next to nothing to build up something that can eventually fuel the generosity of my family for the next 60, 70, 80 years. And hopefully beyond that, if my kids kind of take the mantle and continue to run with the business, that's just unreal to me. That, yeah, it seems like it takes forever in the moment, but when you zoom out a bit and look at your perspective is, you're looking at it from the perspective of your entire life, not just what you're feeling in the moment. It's a fraction of the amount of time that most of us will have on this planet.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, you've kind of mentioned Gary a couple times in the episode. I mentioned him at the beginning of the episode. You know, you have had the chance to interview him. I do want to ask you, you know, what kind of feeling is it when you did get to interview those guys? You know, did it bring you like a sense of accomplishment, or, you know, kind of what was your initial feeling when you interviewed guys that are that big in their areas?
Yeah, I don't think I necessarily cared as much about the Simon Sinek interview. It was certainly cool, and it was a stroke to my ego. I'm a big Simon Sinek fan, but it's hard to say in words how obsessed I am with Gary Vee, because I resonate with what he teaches so much. And so getting to interview him was an extremely surreal experience. Getting to spend, you know, an hour with him, seeing how he interacted with me and then with the person that was interviewing him shortly before our interview started. He's just the real deal. It was really easy to see why he's experienced the success he's experienced, because he's so tuned into people and he's so present with people.
Yeah,
so that was a really cool feeling. I think a lot of, it's a common story to hear when you meet your hero and your hero doesn't turn out to be, you know, as great as you thought they were. And that was the polar opposite experience for me. You know, my business hero is Gary Vee, and getting to spend an hour with him and seeing how incredibly genuine he is, was really relieving. Because it would have been a major crush. It would have been a pretty crushing feeling to figure out that he ended up being a jerk, but that was not the case. And so, yeah, it was really, really cool. But for me, I think it would be easy to get romantic about landing fancy interviews with people.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, I've got to bring it back to kind of my personal why, and like why I built the business that I built. And my why was not to get to interview Gary Vee and Simon Sinek. It was to have ultimate freedom and flexibility, in the work that I do. So not being tied down, having to do a 9-to-5, not being able to, you know, go on trips with my wife whenever I want, or whenever we have kids, you know, not getting to you know, coach basketball leagues or go to soccer games. Like, I want the freedom and flexibility to be able to do that. That's not everybody's why. You know, some people want to build billion-dollar businesses and buy sports franchises like Gary does. Mm-hmm. That's not my why. And so all the joys that I experience in the business, I want to ultimately map back to my why, like the freedom and flexibility that the business affords me. And so that having the freedom, and the availability to be able to go off and do interviews with whoever I want, whenever I want, I enjoy doing those things. And so having a business that lets me do that because I'm the boss is incredibly freeing and awesome. Last week I got to go on a trip in the middle of the week because my wife is off in the middle of the week from her job, and mm-hmm. we got to go to the beach in the middle of the week. Yeah. Having that freedom and flexibility is huge for me. Exactly. And so I'm constantly having to remind myself of my own why. Like, why did I get into entrepreneurship? Because there are a lot of hurdles that come along with that. And if you're not in tune with why am I actually doing this, it's going to be that much harder to stick with it.
How do you think, what do you think the best way is about finding your why? You know, Simon Sinek, he talks about that all the time. Yeah. How do you think that people best do that?
Man, I don't know that there's a magic formula for it. I think starting to think about it, is a great first step. Taking a walk around your neighborhood, leaving your phone, you know, in your room and just thinking, I'm a man of faith. And so for me, it's a lot of prayer. And so I'm talking to God and really asking God, like, man, show me what it is that you put me on this planet to do. And revealed to me like what my motivations in doing this. And so I feel like kind of doing that exercise, it became very clear that freedom and flexibility, building a business that pays me, without me having to be, you know, working 120 hours a week was a huge aspect of it. Yeah. Another piece of it is I want to be doing work that directly correlates to crafting meaningful relationships. And so with our podcast business, like we're not only crafting meaningful relationships for ourselves through our own podcast, but we're doing that for our clients as well. And I care deeply about people. I feel like God cares deeply about people and calls us as Christians to love people well. And so in the business, am I loving my team well? Am I loving our customers well? And so that's, you know, I said my why earlier was freedom and flexibility, but ultimately my why is I want to love people extremely well because God calls us to that. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I can have like my motivation being freedom and flexibility, in conjunction with loving people well, that realization came after lots of prayer, lots of thinking about like why am I here? And so I don't know that there's a magic formula for coming up with it, but investing the time to think about it, and to really spend time digesting, you know, what that looks like for you, I think is a great place to start.
Yeah. Perfect. Thanks for that advice. And then kind of back to what we were talking about earlier about, you know, building the business and how it took longer than you expected. You know, other than that, what's something else that you wish you knew before you started your business?
Something I wish I knew before starting the business. And I wish I would have known that it's going to take much longer than I thought. I wish I would have known, it's kind of correlated to that, how much patience it was really going to take. Very grateful that I ended up having that patience, mm-hmm. and got to, you know, a side of the business where it's really starting to pay off financially. I think that's the biggest one. Like, I wish I would have known how much true patience it takes to build a business that lasts. Yeah. I think thinking more about it, I was very quick to, spend money on anything and everything in the early days of the business. I was chasing a lot of hacks and like, oh, we can, you know, answer questions on Quora. So I'll pay somebody $1,000 a month to answer questions on Quora, or we can do this Facebook thing. So I'll dump, you know, $2,000 in Facebook ads without really having a comprehensive strategy around those tactics. I was just chasing different hacks and I ended up spending a lot of money very poorly. I read a book that I recommend to every single person listening to this called Profit First, that is basically just a way to manage your finances in such a way where you're proactively saving for taxes. You're earmarking how much you want to pay yourself, how much profit you want to be in the business. Based on every piece of revenue that comes in. When I implemented Profit First, I really got lean with how I spend money. It was a forcing function for me to start to consider much more critically what I'm spending money on, why I'm spending money on those things. And I think that's been a huge reason why we're seeing the financial gains that we are today, because I learned how to manage money better. So that's probably another one. I wish I would have read that book before starting the business.
Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously besides the big elephant in the room of, you know, your business eventually, you know, failing, what's your biggest fear in terms of being an entrepreneur?
My biggest fear, probably my biggest fear is something that I got pretty close to becoming a reality, and maybe even was a reality, for a bit there. My biggest fear is that my identity becomes my business. And so, as a Christian, obviously, like I want my identity to be in Christ. And so, but it's extremely difficult, especially in the early days of building a business, to not let your business consume every part of you. It was exactly all I thought about day in and day out. Yep. What, you know, how we can find more customers, how we can serve the customers that we have better. I mean, it was an all consuming thing, and I wasn't being consumed with who God was wanting me to be and how God was wanting to transform me. And so that's, I think, my biggest fear is allowing the business to become my identity instead of Jesus.
Yeah. So how do you think that people separate themselves from that, you know, identity crisis?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. For me, I mean, going back to, you know, where I think my identity should be, it's, you know, surrounding myself with other Christians. Having Christian community has been extremely helpful. Getting more engaged in my Bible and trying to grow there helps kind of root that identity in the things that I believe it should be rooted in. There's a ton of books. I've started diving into more audiobooks that are about kind of faith and work and the balance of those two things. So I think I think it's the type of resources that you're consuming. I think the community and the people that you surround yourself with play a huge part in that. And I think it's the being conscious of, am I letting my business become my identity? I think those three things, can be a massive factor in it.
Perfect. So I do have one more question for you, but before I ask you it, just want to take a sec, tell you how much I appreciate you. You know, especially coming on the show, it was great meeting you last week in person. I think what you talked about with Gary V, you know, meeting your idol and them not turning out to, you know, who you thought they would be, you know, maybe not on a scale like that, obviously, but you know, I knew that you had a successful business. I really didn't know what to expect going in to meet you the first time, but you're exactly the same person that, you know, I talked to over the phone and through email. So I really appreciate you and, you know, how genuine you are. Really appreciate you, man. I really appreciate you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. And so my last question for you is the three truths. And so, you know, it's your last day on earth. You've done everything that you've wanted to. And, you know, you've gotten all the clients you wanted to, you've, you know, put your identity in Christ. You know, you've really lived for him and you've really accomplished everything that you've wanted to, but for some reason at the end of it, you know, everything's wiped out. And the only thing that people have to remember you by is the three things that you write down on the piece of paper next to you. So what are your three truths?
Man, I think, I would want people to know that I loved God, that I, cared deeply about people and that my actions reflected that, specifically my wife and future kiddos, friends and family. So, the third one, would be that, that I deflected glory from myself and pointed it to where I think all glory should go, which is God. And so, I think those would be my three. I would hope people would see me as someone that loved God, loved people, and deflected glory from me to the creator of everything. So, that's a great question, man.
Yeah, of course. All right, James, where can we stay connected with you?
So I'm all over LinkedIn. You can find me there, James Carberry, Carbary, on Twitter as well, at James Carberry. Email is james@sweetfishmedia.com, company sweetfishmedia.com. And I would love to connect with anybody and everybody that wants to connect.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much, James. Guys, go connect with him on LinkedIn. He posts some really great content there. James, thank you so much again. Really appreciate it.
Guys, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, of course. Yep, definitely. Guys, we'll see you on the next episode. What a great episode. I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. I certainly learned a lot from James's personal story, and I hope you did as well. Make sure to follow James on social media at James Carberry and find his company on the internet at sweetfishmedia.com. Make sure to share this episode with your friends. Again, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Emerging Entrepreneurs Podcast and leave a review on iTunes and hit that subscribe button to know exactly when each episode is posted. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next episode.